Hello and welcome to Beyond the Back Page on Near FM with myself, Patrick Donoghue. On the show today, I'll be joined by journalist James Hendicott, who has recently written a book called Conifa, Football for the Forgotten, the untold story of football's alternative World Cup. And I'm delighted to say James is on the line. James, how are you this evening?
I'm very well, Patrick. How are you doing?
Not too bad. So, James, tell us a bit about the what is the Conifa World Cup?
Well, it's a World Cup for unrecognised nations. Now, that can mean real nations like Tuvalu or Kiribati or Monaco, who are just not kind of in vogue or big enough to have connections with FIFA. Or it can mean countries that aren't formally politically recognised, like Tibet and Northern Cyprus, and a few kind of fringe entities around that. So these people get together, football teams, there's about nearly 50 of them now who have representative teams, under the banner of Conifa and play international tournaments outside the scope of kind of official international football, I suppose.
Yeah, and it's a fascinating concept. Where did you hear of this this organisation?
I'm a big fan of St. Pauli, who are a German football club based in Hamburg, who kind of go against modern football. They have socialist principles, and they refuse to kind of spend a lot of money, or they let fans in for a fiver a game. They sell out 35,000 capacity stadiums week in, week out, playing kind of mediocre German second division football. And these guys a few years ago hosted a tournament involving a few of the teams I've already mentioned, as well as Zanzibar, Greenland, and their own kind of representative side as well. And it just kind of made me realise that there are people who are completely disenfranchised from any form of modern-day football. They might not be able to be selected by their own country, for example, for various political reasons. I mean, a Tibetan is never going to be picked to play for China, for example. Or they're simply too small to be realistic in terms of involvement. I mean, obviously we have Gibraltar and UEFA playing, and Luxembourg and Liechtenstein and teams like this, but teams like Tuvalu and Kiribati, who are based in the South Pacific, are probably more than 1,000 miles from the nearest viable international opposition. And try to get FIFA to send teams like Australia or New Zealand to play them is just unrealistic. So they've kind of gone on their own and said, well, we're just going to do our own thing. We're going to have our own tournaments and forget the rest of it. And so landed with this. I mean, the Conifa tournament in London that I write about in the book happened last summer, and this involved 16 of the kind of 50 or so teams that are involved now, and they came from every continent apart from South America. So they've kind of, what Conifa has done is drawn together all these representative teams and put them all into kind of amateur level, but it's a fairly good amateur level tournaments at both the European and world level.
Yeah, and you document in the book the organisation tries to be non-political, but as with everything related to this, politics come into it. And there was attempts, countries like Tibet can beaten, and the Tamil in the area in Sri Lanka, they would have kind of knocked a lot of noses out of joint them can beaten. Can you tell us a little bit about the politics in terms of the efforts that were put in to kind of put pressure on different teams to pull out of the tournament?
Sure. Yeah, well, the clever thing Conifa's done as an organisation is kind of forced everyone when they come in to agree that they will not promote their identity or their politics, but in reality, there's a lot of politics involved in these teams even being allowed to play. So, I mean, we could take Kabylia, who are a region of northern Algeria, as a good example. Kabylia have some very serious players of their kind of ethnic background. Zinedine Zidane would be a good example, or Karim Benzema are both from that region of Algeria, or have their roots in that region of Algeria. The coach who formed that team was arrested in trying to get the team, on several occasions actually, in trying to get the team together, and ended up having to pick a team entirely of emigrants based in France and Belgium to bring to London, because anyone from that region of Algeria was likely to be arrested when they went home. So they ended up with a slightly kind of odd team. And there's a few other ones like that. Tibet is made up of players largely based in India, in kind of the Dharamsala region where the Dalai Lama lives now. And Tibet are extremely unpopular in China as a political entity, and a lot of the sponsors were put under pressure to, Khalifa believes, to pull out of sponsoring the tournament unless Tibet were removed from the competition, which obviously when you're organising a tournament like this, you can't say, well, this team's a little bit politically sensitive, we better remove them, because you'd have no tournament left. So Khalifa stood their ground, Tibet played, and the only sponsor that remained heavily involved was Paddy Power, who just chose to ignore the whole thing entirely and just carry on putting money into it. So there was a real possibility, I'd say, about a month before the tournament that it wouldn't even take place. In the end, it did, with two late replacement teams, because another two couldn't make it for financial rather than political reasons. But there were at least three or four governments who were seriously unhappy about what happened.
And you traverse London covering the games, and in the book you really bring in the colour of the tournament and the fans. And one of the countries or one of the regions I want to ask you about, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Matabeleland in Zimbabwe, they seem to have brought an awful lot of colour to the tournament. And indeed, Bruce Grobbelaar played one of the games. Can you tell us a bit about your interactions with that team?
Sure. Yeah, well, Bruce Grobbelaar, actually, his first ever professional team were Highlanders, who are from Bulawayo, which is the second city of Zimbabwe, and right in the heart of Matabeleland is their main city. But they're a bunch of Zimbabweans from the kind of minority tribal grouping in Zimbabwe, which would be less than popular with Robert Mugabe. So there was plenty of difficulties with getting them out of the country and getting them playing. And it was Bruce Grobbelaar's kind of late intervention that even got them visas to get into the UK. And Matabeleland were there. I mean, I think they probably believed within the team, if not in the management, that they had a real chance of winning the tournament. But I think realistically they were there as a kind of cultural representative, leaving their country for the first time and kind of bringing a taste of it over to London. And they were an absolute joy to be around. I mean, the first game they played a North Italian team called Padania, who are one of the real powerhouses of kind of this type of football. They got played off the park, inevitably. I mean, Padania have players who've played top-level Serie A Italian football, stuff like this. And these are a bunch of lads who've never left their region of Zimbabwe. They got beaten 6-1, but they kind of danced their way onto the field. They danced their way off. They shook hands with all the spectators on the way round and played in these beautiful kind of tribal patterns. And they were an extremely popular team, despite not being perhaps one of the better teams in the tournament because of all this. It was just really beautiful to see. I think because of their story and because of the repression that their culture suffers under Mugabe, it's kind of a first chance to really come out and say, this is who we are. And you really sense that watching them. Beautiful to see.
Yeah, and were they, am I correct in saying they, in order to gain the funds to take part in the tournament, they had to be crowdfunded?
They did, yeah. They were managed by an interesting character, a guy called Justin Wally, who he spent a lot of his life travelling and doing various things in different corners of the world, and had settled in Latvia for the last 4 or 5 years, running a Latvian second-tier men's football team and coaching them. And he kind of stumbled across this team looking for a manager and decided that's what he was going to do next. And I think, to be honest, if it wasn't for Justin's involvement, they wouldn't have raised anything like the amount of money they needed to get to London. And they sold shirts, they sold Zimbabwean currency, you know, the old hyperinflated stuff, $1 billion notes, that kind of thing. Pretty much anything they could get hold of to raise about, you know, it was about 40 grand in the end to get over there. And they just about made it. I mean, they were still crowdfunding in London in order to be able to go on a very cheap tour to see the city, because they'll likely never come back.
Yeah. And covering that tournament, does it kind of restore your faith in football? Because football at the moment is so corporate, but seeing a tournament like that, does it kind of do your heart good, seeing teams and the kind of sacrifices and what they have to achieve, and indeed their pride in representing the regions that they're representing?
It does, of course, yeah. I mean, I'm a football fan, obviously, that's why I wrote this, but it's hard not to be disenfranchised when you feel like the Well, there's a great stat around the English league. I mean, you can almost predict the order that the league finishes in by looking at the salaries. It's extremely close to correct. And that's just, you know, it takes the romance out of football. Yeah. I mean, we all know who the top six or seven are going to be every year. We know who's likely to win the league. And there's something beautiful about watching a tournament that involves almost no players you've ever heard of before.
Yeah.
Nobody really knows who the good teams are and who the bad teams are or what kind of style they're going to play in. And yet they're really passionate about what they're doing. It's not a Sunday league kind of thing. They really, really care about this. They will cry on the pitch when they win.
Yeah.
So it's a fantastic experience. And unfortunately, the next one is in Artsakh, which is kind of disputed region between Armenia and Azerbaijan, so it might be a little bit more difficult to get to than London, but last year was a massively good experience.
And one of the experiences that I enjoyed reading about, it mightn't have been enjoyable for you, was you met some Hungarian very passionate supporters who stole your laces there. Can you tell us about your encounter with them fans?
Yeah, I've got to be honest, it was one of those moments where I'm stood there and, I've been walking around all these grounds. I think I made probably 25 to 26 games of football in 10 days. And so you're trying to get a sense of what these people believe, what they're there for, what their motivation is. And two of the Hungarian teams, one of whom was Hungarian expats in the Ukraine and the other one is Hungarian expats in Romania, were kind of extremely passionately followed, perhaps more so than the other teams at the tournament. And you'd turn up and there'd be, 100 half-cut Hungarians with flares at a group game on a Sunday afternoon in the middle of North London, a kind of non-league ground. And these guys, I went up to them and was like, kind of trying to get a sense of what it's all about. And one of them was talking to me, proper full-on stench of beer breath. And the second guy's kind of bent down by my shoes, and I knew something was going on, but I thought, oh, this is a great story, I just kind of leave him to it. And 30 seconds later, he's kind of pops up, lighter in one hand, shoelace in the other, and he's burnt my shoelaces off to tie his flag to the side of the banner. Stop. Which, I thought, well, this is a good story, I'll let it carry on. But they were the only ones who were really like that. They're a little bit kind of in the European ultra tradition, if not quite so extreme.
And looking ahead, sorry, what do you see the future of the tournament? Do you think it's going to, I know there's a European tournament coming up this year. Do you think it's a tournament that will continue to flourish and more teams will look to join the organisation?
I think more teams will look to join, that's almost certain. I think they're likely to have difficulties, actually, with teams that have slightly less legitimate claims than the current ones. There's quite a few kind of English regions trying to get involved at the moment, for example, and I don't think anybody's really... nobody wants to see Surrey play Yorkshire in a supposedly world tournament. But if it collapses, it will be for financial reasons, I think. I mean, the passion behind it is absolutely clear, but you're bringing amateur footballers halfway around the world, and we're talking about squads of 20 players and managers and things like this. And they're getting more and more ambitious in terms of where they're hosting the tournament. As I mentioned, the European one is in Artsakh, and in 2020 they've announced the next world tournament's going to be in Somaliland, which is a kind of a disputed region of Somalia, so it's going to be even more difficult in terms of getting people there and bringing it all together. So they're very, very ambitious. That could cause financial difficulties down the line. We'll see. I hope not, because it's a wonderful idea.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting. We'll keep an eye on it. Before I let you go, James, if you don't mind, I might ask you about, you mentioned in the book that you're an Aston Villa fan. Do you think? They're guaranteed a place in the playoffs as things stand, and they look to be in good form. What do you think their prospects now for getting back to the Premier League?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? It's the playoffs are such a lottery.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Obviously, you want to be the form team going into it. I think we have as good a chance as anyone, but it's a bit make or break for Villa. I mean, the potential to lose Grealish, McGinn, Tammy Abraham. I mean, Tammy Abraham will probably go anyway because he's on loan, but The core of the squad is likely to go if they don't win the playoffs, and that's obviously a bit of a problem. So I would say, you know, maybe we've got slightly better than a 25% chance of getting out of it, but it's, you can't count your chickens at that tournament.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating because I know a lot of Irish support. There's a lot of Irish supporters of Villa, I think going back to the 90s when Ray Houghton and all them guys were there, Steve Staunton, and there's a lot of Irish supporters of Leeds, so I know a lot of Irish people will be following the playoffs. But James, listen, thanks a million for joining me. For people that want to get their hands on the book, I have the book in front of me, and it's really, really, I've been reading it over the last couple of weeks, and it's excellent. I think what I'd say to people who are listening in, it's a book for football fans, but it's also interesting because you give an insight into the different areas, the different geopolitics. It's really, really interesting. So for people that want to get their hands on the book, do you want to give people your website that they can...
Yeah, honestly, the easiest way to get to it is probably just to search Khenifa Football for the Forgotten.
Yeah.
And it will flash up. My website is just my surname, HendicottWriting.com.
Perfect.
And you can find it that way as well.
Yeah.
I put it on Kindle as of today as well. So
perfect.
You can find it on Amazon too.
Brilliant. Listen, congratulations on the book. It's an excellent read. Thanks a million for joining us, and the best of luck to Aston Villa for the rest of the season, and hopefully they might get to the Premiership.
Thanks very much, Patrick. Appreciate it.
Cheers. Thanks a million, James. That was great. That was James Hendicott, who was joining us there, telling us about his book, Khenifa, Football for the Forgotten, The Untold Story of Football's Alternative World Cup. I'm just going to take a piece of music now, and after that we will just look ahead to some events and fixtures. It's a busy weekend coming up in sport, so we look ahead to some of them events. I was away for the last 2 weeks, but I'm delighted to be back on the show today, and we hope to have loads of interesting guests for the next few weeks. I'm just, before I wrap up this evening, I'm just going to look ahead to some fixtures coming up over the weekend. I'll start tonight, of course, after the drama of the Champions League of the last two nights. We have the Europa League tonight, Arsenal hosting Valencia, and Eintracht Frankfurt hosting Chelsea. Interesting to see whether we'll get an all-English final there. And on Friday, in domestic action in the League of Ireland Premier League, Bohemians who will host Cork City, Dundalk will host Derry, and St Pat's will host Waterford. And Finn Harps will play UCD. And on Saturday, Sligo Rovers will host Shamrock Rovers. An exciting division at the moment. Very, very tight. So interesting to see how the fixtures go over the weekend. And in the first division, we have Athlone and Cove. Cabinteely will host Shelburne. Drogheda will play Longford. And Galway will play Wexford, and also the final game there is Limerick and Bray. If you are in and around the Dublin region on Friday night, I'd urge you to try and get down to the Ireland is hosting the European Under-17s Football Championship. The games are going to be all over the country. They're going to be down in Waterford, they're going to be in Tallaght Stadium, Talca Park, UCD Bowl, Home Farm Stadium, City Colin Stadium in Longford. So Ireland kick off their campaign on Friday night at 7 p.m. That's in Tallaght Stadium at 7 p.m. So if you are in and around the Tallaght area, I urge you to go down, because it'd be great to see, because our underage teams seem to be doing very well at the moment, and it'd be great if Ireland can qualify out of that tournament. They did very well in the tournament in England last year, so hopefully they can replicate that success. And they're on Monday, their second fixture It was down in Waterford. They play Czech Republic, and they finish off the tournament this day week against Belgium at 7 p.m. So if you get a chance, go down to support that. Cross channel, we talked to James there earlier. It's the end of the championship and the other English league seasons, and in the Premier League, it's the penultimate games in the Premier League this season. And we've one game on Friday night. Everton play Burnley, and the rest of the games are Bournemouth against Spurs, West Ham against Southampton, Wolves against Fulham, Cardiff against Crystal Palace, Newcastle against Liverpool. And on Sunday, we have Chelsea and Watford, Huddersfield and Manchester United, and Arsenal and Brighton. And hard to believe, we actually have the start of the GAA Football Championship this weekend, where New York will host Mayo and London will play Galway. And I know them events are great for the expat community. And in rugby on Saturday, we at 3 p.m. we have the semi-final qualifiers in the Pro 14. Munster will play Benetton. Ulster will play Connacht at 5:35, and the All-Ireland Rugby League final is on Sunday. It's Clontarf, local side here, will play Cork Conn, and we'll be keeping an eye on the snooker. A lot of favourites gone out. Ronnie O'Sullivan knocked out first round, so always, as it's a long bank holiday weekend, a lot of people will be keeping an eye on the final of the snooker. We also have the Ireland will host England on Friday in the cricket. That's down at Malahide at 10:45. It's the first of two games in and around the next few days. They're also playing West Indies on the 5th of May, and that's in Clontarf. That's pretty much it for this evening. There'll be more sport on the way on Near FM. Fergus will have his Saturday sports show. He'll have a more comprehensive preview of the weekend sporting events, and he'll also have a roundup of the results of the weekend on this Sunday night sports show, where results package. You can listen back to any of our previous shows on the website on nearfm.ie. If you search Beyond the Back Page, you will get back some previous interviews and guests. We have had some interesting guests, and you can also give myself a follow. It's Beyond the Back Page on Twitter, and leave your comments or if you have any suggestions for future guests. But that's it for this evening. Thanks for tuning in. I'd like to sincere word of thanks to James Hendicott, who joined me earlier on the show. Thank you for tuning in, and I will talk to you at the same time next week.